Welcome to the High Percentage Podcast. I turned myself into a podcast Morty. I'm Podcast Rick.
Yo, welcome back to High Percentage. I'm excited about today's episode. I want to lead it with a question, which is, what do you think is the most personal aspect of jiu-jitsu? While you're thinking about that, I want to mention that High Percentage is brought to you by Keenan Cornelius' Lapel Guard Encyclopedia. World's coming up pretty soon, and I am excited and curious to see what kind of new developments and innovations people are using at the gi level of jiu-jitsu. And one thing that I'll be looking for is to see if people are starting to implement Keenan's lapel guard game. This is one thing that we see with the meta is that it starts with the black belts who have pressure on them to kind of innovate and create new things because that's the 1% trying to beat the 1%. And then if it's successful, the brown, purple, and eventually blue belts will start implementing those techniques too. And Keenan's lapel guard DVD came out last September, I think. So it's really been enough time that I think other students are going to start implementing it. I don't know if Keenan himself is competing at the Worlds this year, but I'm sure he is. And I'm really curious to see how he does and what his guards look like or his guard game. It's funny because Keenan, you know, he's become known as a guard player, but if you watch his videos, he's got really good wrestling too. So it'll be kind of interesting that he might be a top guy this year at Worlds and he's gotten better and better at those kind of single and falling double leg takedowns. So, you know, maybe he'll go through all that work to put out the DVD and then he'll end up being a top guy. But, you know, whatever it takes. If you enter the checkout code high percentage, that's the word high and then the symbol for percent. When you're purchasing Keenan's lapel guard DVD, you can get 10% off. And that's pretty significant because it's a pretty expensive DVD. I think it's over $200. I think the value is definitely there. It's like 7 hours long. There's like 9 chapters, 5 different guards. He goes over common counters to the guards, very concepts-based approach. And if you've ever seen Keenan's previews on his Instagram, you know that he's a pretty good instructor. I think he's very articulate. And of course, at High Percentage, we're a big fan of him, the way he looks at jiu-jitsu. You know, guards are a personal thing, but you know, if you can innovate and use a guard system or any system really that is sort of new in the jiu-jitsu meta, a lot of times you'll have a real serious advantage. And we're going to be talking today about the jiu-jitsu meta and especially about what the meta is like at the white belt level. So let's get to it. Okay, so I asked at the beginning of the episode, what do you think is the most personal aspect of jiu-jitsu? And in my opinion, it's the guard. The guard is something that you see the most amount of variation between different players. There are some positions that are kind of foundational, and while you'll see some variation of techniques people use from a place like maybe the bottom of the mount or even the top of the mount, it's pretty easy to teach a new student. It's more or less a standardized set of, you know, side mount escapes, top mount attacks, things like that. But it gets a little harder with the guard because the guard's a very personal thing. And there are some guards that are better suited for, you know, your personal style, your body type, etc., than others. A problem or a challenge that we see is that if you're an instructor, it's not the most efficient thing to be teaching all the guards right away. So what instructors sort of have to do is they have to choose foundational guards. And it's more or less been unanimously decided in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that the foundational guard is what? Was the close guard, obviously. And the data backs this up. We're actually doing a study right now at the blue belt level to see what kind of guards blue belts are incorporating the most. And we started doing it at the white belt level, and we kind of quit early on because we realized there was no point. It's basically all close guard. There are very few white belts that are not using close guard. And what anyone that's trained in jiu-jitsu for a while knows is that most likely you're not going to stay with close guard indefinitely. As you progress in your jiu-jitsu journey, you'll start experimenting with other guards and you'll learn what you like and what you don't like. And that was sort of the catalyst for this episode was at my academy, We do a fundamentals class, which I go to before the regular, the advanced class. And in the fundamentals, we're working on close guard all month. And they don't really do sparring in that class. They do positional drills. So for basically the entire month of April, I was doing positional drills from either top or the bottom of close guard. And it was healthy for me because I got to kind of work on my close guard game. I don't really do close guard a lot on my own. And I was sitting and I was talking with another guy, and he has a smaller build like I do. And we were joking like, yeah, what's funny is that we hate close guard. Like if it was up to us, like we would never end up in close guard in a role. If we got in close guard, it means that we made mistakes, you know, a while ago. And, we sort of just joke that we used to spend a lot of time in close guard. But you know, as soon as we found out that there were other viable options, we got away for that. So that leads to what I want to talk about today, which is in the meta of tournament Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, how can we exploit the fact that the vast majority of white belts that you would compete against will be using close guard, whether you're a competitor or even if you're an instructor and you're helping your students kind of craft their game plan or craft their training. The fact that we can count on most of our competitors incorporating close guard is something that it's kind of like the song, like you don't know what you have till it's gone, right? Because eventually you're going to go on to blue, purple, brown belt, and a huge challenge that you will encounter is that you really don't know what kind of specialist you're going to be up against, and you could have a really good, you know, standing guard pass game, but you happen to go up against a specialist who is extremely good at like the sit-up guard or, you know, the single leg X guard, and that's a really good natural counter to what you do. So it's becomes a lot more of sort of a grab bag of what kind of person you're going to go up against, and sometimes you just could run up against someone who has a really good natural counter to your game. So when that happens to you, you'll long for the days when everyone did close guard, and you'll be like, God, if I could do it again, I would focus my game to shut down those kinds of guards so that I could have a serious advantage. So that's something that it's worth talking about. Okay, so let's break this down from two separate angles. The first angle is, what are good ways to counter or to shut down a close guard? And in order to do this, it's worth breaking down what are kind of the strengths and the weaknesses of the close guard. So the big strength of close guard is that it's a control-based guard, and you can get really good control of someone, control of their posture, and close the distance. That's really why it is the fundamental guard, because it's the self-defense guard. It's the guard that, you know, traditionally we associate with the old Vale Tudo matches, and that's a big strength that it has. And of course, it has a lot of submissions and sweeps that you could incorporate with it. But there is one big trade-off with that, which is that when the close guard was popular in the Vale Tudo days, there was an assumption built in that we didn't really talk about, which is we sort of assumed that our opponents would be trying to get as close to us as possible for strikes. But in a competitive jiu-jitsu match, that's not necessarily the case. And that leads into one of the big exploits of close guard, which is it's actually hard to force someone into your close guard. Someone sort of has to come to you. And of course, it's not impossible. But when you compare it to something like one of the De La Hiva guards or some of the other open guards, you can really bring the fight to someone with an open guard. With a close guard, you kind of need to have them meet you halfway, unless what? You do something like pull guard. And that leads to the first strategic thing that you should consider doing when you're training to fight the close guard meta, which is learn and drill some really good counters to guard pulling. We know based on the data that we've done at the white belt level, exactly 49% of the matches contain no takedowns. Now, not necessarily all of those contain guard pulls. There are some matches that there's just no takedowns, period. But, you know, about half the time, maybe a little bit less, there's going to be a guard pull. So it's worth your time, whether or not you're thinking about the close guard game or not, it's worth your time you know, pulling your instructor aside, going on YouTube, looking up some good guard pull counters and just drilling them and getting really, really skilled at them. Because the other thing about a guard pull counter is they really land you in typically a guard pass right away, like side control. And we know that 65% of winners pass guard at the white belt level. So you can kill two birds with one stone. You can get around someone's close guard, you can pass their guard, and then, you know, you're kind of home free as long as you hang on and don't make any serious errors past there. Second tip is to prioritize learning standing guard passes. One of the key ingredients that your opponent needs to trap you in close guard is they need you on your knees. If you're on your feet, they cannot get you in close guard. And if you think about someone that has spent a lot of time in close guard, they've probably learned relatively few sweeps for a standing opponent, and they've probably learned little, if any, open guards. So just you standing on your feet automatically puts them at a big disadvantage. Now, if you can compound that by getting some good standing guard passes, nothing fancy, something like the bullfighter pass is a great start. You have taken away one of their main weapons. And if they haven't spent the time to learn counters to standing guard passes, then you've sidestepped a huge part of their game. So my last piece of advice is what to do when you're in close guard, because sometimes you just can't help it. You end up in close guard. Now, this is a real kind of a risk, maybe a little bit of a Hail Mary, but the numbers are sound on this, which is 85% of submission attempts from the bottom fail at the white belt level, at least when we watched 100 IBJJF gi matches. If you have better data, I'd love to see it. So that does suggest that you might want to let someone attempt a submission on you, because here's the other important part of that. We did a separate study, and it's on the website. It's I think it's called Why the Math is Against White Belt and Submissions. And then we found that submission attempts from the bottom very, very often result in a failed position. So you put those two things together, which is most bottom submission attempts fail, and most of the time they fail, they result in a guard pass for you. It might not be the worst idea when you're in someone's close guard to throw an arm out there, let them shoot for an armbar, and if you do it with a specific intention that you're baiting them for a trap, especially if you've drilled it for a couple weeks at your gym, just practiced, you know, grab someone that's really skilled and say, hey, just armbar me, just triangle me over and over, I'll give you the indicators, and then you get really good at pulling that out at the last minute, that might be a really good trick. Now, the reason I say it's kind of a Hail Mary is I'm not a big fan of your strategy revolving around people making mistakes, because as you get better, people will make less and less mistakes. However, like I said, the data is pretty clear on that. Sometimes if you are playing the posture game in close guard, you have, you know, really good posture and your neck's up and you're not letting them get control of you, they might not be submitting you, but they ain't gonna let go either. And you know, that's one thing the close guard is really good for, is you can draw out matches for a long time and you can really eat up the clock in close guard. So sometimes in order to expedite it, especially if you're down on points, it's more efficient just to give someone a cue for a submission, let them attempt it and, you know, counter it, let them fail. A great example is triangles from the bottom were very, very low percentage. And I think armbars from the bottom were too. So if you learn a couple good armbar defenses from someone attacking you on close guard, you might be surprised at how well that strategy actually works. So the other side of this is the offensive side, which is if everyone's using close guard, does that mean that you should not use close guard yourself? And really, to me, the answer is it kind of does depend. Close guard is one of many guards. It's not the best guard. I don't think there is a best guard. It's a combination of what works for you and what works in the meta of jiu-jitsu at the time. Now, I will say that at the white belt level, what guard do you think most white belts will be best equipped to counter? Well, it's definitely going to be the close guard. So if you use another guard, it's a high likelihood that they will not have the answers yet at that point in their training. So that alone is motivation to, if you want to pursue another guard, you should do it. One thing that we tend to think of is there's a paradigm out there that close guard is the basic guard and everything else is the advanced guard. But I would argue that the reason we teach close guard to beginners is mainly because of history and tradition. I think close guard actually can be surprisingly complex, and if you took two people that didn't know jiu-jitsu, and you showed one close guard and one something like the butterfly guard, would one of them really be more complex than the other? I don't know about that. So what I would say is that any guard that you find that is a good strength for, you know, based on your attributes and your personality, you should embrace. But when I look at, when I watched all these white belt and even all the blue belt matches, I don't have any hard data on this again, but I do notice that when you get to the championship level, like the worlds for the white belts, you'll see that some of the really good white and blue belts out there, they are experimenting with a little bit more advanced guards, and that gives them an advantage because their opponents just aren't at a point in their training yet where they're able to have the answers for those. So just something to think about when you're thinking about what kind of guard is best for me. And please don't go telling your instructors that I said that close guard is trash, because it's not. That's all for this podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. If you want to get in touch with me, my email is highpercentagemartialarts@gmail.com. You can obviously check out our website, highpercentagemartialarts.com. If you want to see other projects that I'm involved in, I'm a monthly contributor to the Jiu-Jitsu Times, and I'm also the managing editor for a site called ujujitsu.com. We put up usually two articles every week. I write some of them, and then we have some other great writers on staff that write the rest of them. I also just started a High Percentage newsletter. You can subscribe to it when you go to our homepage. And what the newsletter is it's just kind of a once a month newsletter that recaps everything that's on the site and also gives you a preview of some of the new stuff that we're working on. I got a lot of exciting stuff kind of in the boiler. I'm still working out details of what forms they're all going to come in, but I'm really excited about, you know, creating a high percentage system and coming out with a product that can be a little bit more directive than some of the articles and the content on the site, and kind of put it all together into a complete package that can help newer students focus their training using science and data, which is what we're all about. Thank you guys for listening. I'll see you next week.